Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the World View. It is the Weekly World View. So glad to have you back on the show where we don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. We're going to look back on the week that was and ahead to the week that is before us. And I think I want to start just by thanking everyone for the prayers for the two youngsters associated with Denver Bible Church who had some horrible injuries, but they're making remarkable recoveries. I tell you what, the Lord builds them tough, those kiddos. But thank you, everybody out there, and do continue to pray because they're not totally out of the woods yet, but it has been a remarkable couple of weeks, and we're so thankful for the way God made us, and we always want to acknowledge Him in that, and just seek His grace. Amen. Can I get an amen? Oh, no, I can't get an amen because my extremely attractive audio engineer has a mouthful of food. Otherwise, she would have been piping up with a big amen. All right. Now, I've got more stuff than I could possibly get through in a mere hour. A meager hour is all we do here at the Weekly Worldview because we like to follow the old axiom to always leave them begging for more, if that's the case. If that's not the case for you, well, then I guess it's a pretty long hour. But for most of our listeners, they're just begging for more, and we do that on purpose. All right. Now, I want to start in Athens, Georgia. This is from our domestic tranquility file. This is from onlineathens.com, which is something of a news organization there in the Athens, Georgia area. A 48-year-old Athens, Georgia woman was brought to jail last week for stabbing a man. Her name is Essie Mae Jones, and she told police that she stabbed the victim because he called her a derogatory name. Now, officers were called to Essie Mae's home after someone dialed 911, officers arrived and found three people fighting on the front lawn. One of the men was bleeding profusely from a stab wound to his stomach. Now, a crack pipe was found on the ground near Jones' feet, and an officer noted that all of the people involved in the altercation appeared to be, quote, very intoxicated, unquote. Yeah. An officer wrote in a report, Essie also stated to me that I should at least let her smoke her crack pipe before I take her to jail, since they won't let her smoke crack in jail. Jones was charged with aggravated assault and third-degree child cruelty because the assault was witnessed by two young children. So that's a state of domestic tranquility in Athens, Georgia. Also, I noticed that apparently no one was charged in regard to the crack or the crack pipe. I'm not sure why that would be. I suppose the police had bigger fish to fry at that moment, what with the profuse bleeding and all. But still, you would think, isn't smoking crack around kids some kind of criminal activity? I would think it is. But that's the state of domestic tranquility in Athens, Georgia. Now, let's go on to the culture file. A lot going on as we move forward into the week, ladies and gentlemen. And this one, well, this is taking place in March. There's a story here from CBS in Washington, D.C. Thousands of atheists are expected to attend the Reason Rally next month in Washington, D.C. It's going to take place on the National Mall. And David Silverman, who is a chair, he's not actually a chair. I think he's a chairman for the Reason Rally Coalition, and he's also the president of American Atheists. I wonder why they use chair. I think chairman is considered sexist, so now they just call you a chair if you're actually a chairman. But he's a chair of the Reason of the Rally. Can I get it out? Can I spit it out? The Reason Rally Coalition, and he's president of American Atheists. He says, quote, "We want to celebrate the fact that we are growing, we are stronger, and we are taking our place in American society," unquote. That's from the president of American Atheists. He says there are more atheists in the country right now than Jews, Muslims, Hindus, and Buddhists combined, and doubled, for good measure. And he says, that's a lot of people. And we are the most hated for no reason other than pure and simple religious bigotry spurned by ignorance. Really, Mr. Silverman? A little thin-skinned for an atheist. Anyway, Mr. Silverman, we don't hate you because of ignorance. It's not ignorance at all. It's actually knowledge of where your ilk has brought civilization before. Yes, you remember Nazism, communism? Those are atheistic worldviews and atheistic governmental systems. And they brought us the murder of about 100 million people in the 20th century. So we know where people like you will take us. Oh, and then there's modern secular humanism, which is at the vanguard of atheism. And when you think about the murder of innocent children, they've killed more than the Nazis and the communists combined and doubled, Mr. Silverman. So I think our hatred is well placed. And yes, Mr. Silverman, I hate you. I'm willing to say it. I know. But I love you enough to give you an opportunity to repent of your ignorance of your father, the Creator. I'm not going to give the date of the rally because I don't want to give the atheists any. Well, not that anyone in this audience would. Well, actually, we got some people who might go to the atheist rally just to have some fun and get their hate on with the atheists. I actually have an atheist who's a friend of mine. I'm going to carpool with an atheist down to the Eric Metaxas rally. I don't know if it's a rally. He's speaking at a church in Colorado Springs a couple Sundays from now. I'm actually going to carpool down there with an atheist and just get my hate on all the way. And I'm going to make the atheist buy the gas because of my deep-seated hatred of atheists. Now, speaking of Eric Metaxas, ladies and gentlemen, I am tempted to read this entire article. And I try not to do that, but it's just so incredibly huge, this article about Eric Metaxas. I heard coverage last week about the National Prayer Breakfast at which one Barry Hussein Soetoro, also known as Barry Obama, also known as the president, he spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast, and I heard a lot of conservative talk shows and secular media outlets cover the National Prayer Breakfast and Mr. Obama's remarks, but nowhere did I hear about this. It's an article from National Review, sent to me by the signature coordinator for the personhood campaign. We're gearing up here in Colorado for round three, and the folks over there at headquarters like to keep me appraised of newsworthy events and articles. So she sent me this article from National Review, and it's entitled "The President and the Prophet: Obama's Unusual Encounter with Eric Metaxas." That's right, Eric Metaxas, who's the author of a number of books, including Bonhoeffer, which I wrote and talked a lot about here. Eric Metaxas gave the keynote address at the National Prayer Breakfast. And let me just get into the article because I'm probably going to end up reading just about every word because it's just so juicy. Eric Metaxas, the keynote address, according to the author, Mark Joseph, over at National Review, the keynote address at the National Prayer Breakfast was given by a little-known historical biographer named Eric Metaxas, whose clever wit and punchy humor barely disguised a series of heat-seeking missiles that were sent, intentionally or not, in the commander-in-chief's direction. Obama began his address directly after Mr. Metaxas spoke, but both his tone and the speech itself were flat, and Obama looked as though he wished he could either crawl into a hole or have a different speech in front of him. In fact, one could be forgiven for thinking that somehow Metaxas had been given an advanced copy of Obama's talk and then tailored his own to rebut the president's. But ladies and gentlemen, that was not the case at all. Metaxas, Mr. Joseph continues, Metaxas is a Yale grad and a humor writer who once wrote for the children's series Veggie Tales. Well, he began his speech with several jokes and stole the show early on when he noted that George W. Bush, often accused by his critics of being incurious, had read Metaxas' weighty tome on the German theologian Bonhoeffer. Metaxas then proceeded to hand a copy of the book to the President of the United States, and he said, quote, "No pressure." And Obama had to take the book, right? Now, Obama came to the prayer breakfast with a tidy speech designed to lay doubts about his Christian faith to rest. He spoke of his daily habit of prayer and Bible reading, his regular conversations with preachers, and he even told a story of the time he prayed over Billy Graham. Oh, Barry. Now, but before the president could utter a word, it was Metaxas who delivered a devastating, albeit apparently unintentional, critique of such God talk, recounting his own religious upbringing, which Metaxas himself described as culturally Christian, yet simultaneously full of phony religiosity. Metaxas said, matter-of-factly, quote, "I thought I was a Christian. I guess I was lost," unquote. Now, standing no more than 5 feet from Obama, whose binder had a speech chock full of quotes from the good book, Metaxas said of Jesus this: when he was tempted in the desert, who was the one throwing Bible verses at him? It was Satan. That is a perfect picture of dead religion, Metaxas said, using the words of God to do the opposite of what God does. It's grotesque when you think about it. It's demonic, he said, as Barry squirmed in his seat, getting up to deliver his grotesque and demonic recital of various Bible verses. Now, Metaxas went on to say, keep in mind, when someone says, I am a Christian, it may mean absolutely nothing. The author says Metaxas added that for good measure in case anybody missed the point. I wonder if he stared daggers at Barry when he said that. Now, author Mark Joseph continues, the eerie feeling that Metaxas was answering Obama on a speech he had yet to give continued as he spoke about the uniqueness of Jesus Christ and the Christian religion. Moments after Metaxas finished his speech, Obama took great pains to describe the other great religions of the world as mirroring his own Christian faith. Barry said, quote, I believe in God's command to love thy neighbor as thyself. I know the version of that golden rule is found in every major religion and every set of beliefs, from Hinduism to Islam, Allahu Akbar, to Judaism and the writings of Plato. Unquote. That's Barry. Now, Mark Joseph says, translation, Christianity is great, and so are the other major religions, which essentially just teach the same stuff. Well, Metaxas, speaking minutes earlier, had a radically different take. He methodically recounted the story of what motivated the actions of abolitionist William Wilberforce. Metaxas said, quote, the reason Wilberforce fought so hard because around the time of his 25th birthday, he encountered Jesus Christ. The idea to care for the poor or that slavery is wrong, these ideas are not normal human ideas. They are biblical ideas, unquote. But Metaxas' most blistering attack, albeit sheathed carefully in good humor and rapier wit, was still to come. For next on his agenda was his careful but dogged determination to link previous attitudes among churchgoers towards slavery and Nazism with those of some present-day churchgoers toward the killing of innocent children. Surrounded by three of the most powerful supporters of baby killing, Barry Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, and former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, Metaxas said this, quote, Wilberforce suddenly took the Bible seriously, that all of us are created in the image of God to care for the least of these, unquote. After carefully describing the inhumane treatment of both Jews and Africans by those claiming to be Christians, he asked and then answered a question. He said, quote, you think you're better than the Germans of that era? You are not. Whom do we say is not fully human today? Unquote. Promising to come back to that question later, Metaxas then attempted to link his two main points, that Jesus was unique and distinct from all other religions or teachers, and that a correct understanding of his role would lead to a correct view on what Metaxas considered to be the defining issue of today, as well as eras gone by. He said, quote, I would say the same thing about the unborn. Apart from God, we cannot see that they are persons. So those of us who know the unborn to be human beings are commanded by God to love those who do not yet see. We need to know that apart from God, we would be on the other side of that divide, fighting for what we believe is right. Unquote. Powerful, powerful stuff from a former comedy writer for VeggieTales. in the presence of three of the most powerful people on the planet. Let's just conclude this because I've got to hand it to Mark Joseph. This is as well-written a report on an actual historical event, as well-written as anything I've ever read. Congratulations, Mr. Joseph. He says, by the time Metaxas wrapped up his speech with a rendition of Amazing Grace, one got the feeling that this was a modern-day and perhaps more humorous version of what Old Testament prophets regularly did to the kings of Israel, deliver brutally honest messages from Yahweh with little regard for their personal safety. Only this time there were no beheadings, only the difficult-to-watch spectacle of seeing a president forced to uncomfortably read a speech which had just been shredded to pieces by a man who couldn't possibly have known that this was coming. And as he did so, the audience in that room likely left with Metaxas' four-word condemnation, intentional or not, of the 44th president of the United States ringing in their ears. Mr. Metaxas' four-word condemnation for Barry and Jumpin' Joe and Nan Pelosi, God is not fooled. Worldview, and I'm Doug McBurney, and I've taken up a good portion of the first part of the show with that Metaxas article, and I just I can't wait to go down there and just shake the man's hand and buy another one of his books, because I had his book but I loaned it out, as well I should have, I'm going to need a signed copy from Mr. Metaxas in hopes that he may one day be the president of the United States. All right, but let's move on now because there's a lot more news. By the way, and any of our Colorado listeners, I will put up a link to the Metaxas speech. It's down at Summit Ministries, it's put on by Summit Ministries, and it's at a church down in Colorado Springs. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I'll put a link up on the website if you want to join me and my atheist friend, who will be buying my gas on the way down. All right, let's go to the culture file. This is Dateline Toronto, Canada, from the Reuters Wire. A study published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal has reached the conclusion that after examining 20 years of published research on the issue, that spanking children can cause long-term developmental damage and may even lower a child's IQ. That's right. This is according to Joan Durant, a professor at the University of Manitoba. She's one of the authors of the study. She says, quote, if we had this level of consistency in findings in any other area of health, we would be acting on it. We'd be pulling out all the stops to work on this issue. Now, Durant and her co-author, Ron Ensom, with the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario in Ottawa, cite research showing that physical punishment makes children more aggressive and antisocial and can cause cognitive impairment and developmental difficulties. They say, quote, there are no studies that show any long-term positive outcomes from physical punishment. One of the authors says, quote, here we have more than 80 studies, actually probably more than 100, that show the same thing about corporal punishment, and yet we keep calling it controversial. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to respond to this because, as you know, I'm an advocate of training and disciplining children and incorporating corporal punishment where necessary. And, you know, when the authors say that there are no studies that show any long-term positive outcomes from physical punishment, I would just ask them to look at the last 6,000 years of human history and the Judeo-Christian ethic that has led to some of the greatest civilizations on the face of the earth. And also, I do want to point out, these studies that are culled together, they say that they're from the last 20 years. So let's go in the Wayback Machine back to 1990. Yeah, that was over 20 years ago. So I would posit the theory that 95 to 99% of parents involved in child rearing since 1990 have no idea how to train or discipline children, and that they often strike their children in anger. And so if you study a bunch of secular morons beating on their kids, of course you're going to find out that corporal punishment is detrimental, because that's not corporal punishment, it's abuse, and that's what they've been studying. But for those of us who know how to train our children and never to strike a child in anger, we know how to employ corporal punishment, and our kids will rule over your kids, okay? And so I don't put a lot of credibility. I don't assign a lot of credibility to a bunch of studies since 1990. I mean, we lost the culture war, what, around 1983? I mean, parents have been wandering in the wilderness as far as how to raise their kids for 30 years. Forget 20 years.
These people might not have kids.
Yeah, what are the odds that these two professors have any kids at all? Yeah. That's a good point. What are the odds that they're even married to people of the opposite sex in Canada, for crying out loud? I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions. That's just my opinion. But anyway, people at the pinnacle of the educational and judicial and governmental culture, to me, they're all suspect at this point. And I've got a case in point right here from the Justice File from Columbus, Ohio. The Associated Press reports, 30 years ago, Paul Pfeiffer helped write Ohio's death penalty law. Today, as the senior member of the state Supreme Court, he's trying to eliminate it. So there you go, folks. Another example of what's happened in the past 30 years. There's an assault on corporal punishment and the proper training and discipline of children, and there's an all-out assault on the death penalty. The AP goes on to report, it's not uncommon for sitting judges to change their minds. Yeah. The U.S. Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun famously said in 1994 he would no longer, quote, tinker with the machinery of death. Yeah. Uh-huh. Harry Blackmun, he's the one who legalized abortion in America. Now, Judge Pfeiffer goes on to say, quote, I have concluded that the death sentence makes no sense to me at this point when you can have life without possibility of parole. Pfeiffer said in his most recent public comments, testifying in December in favor of a bill to abolish Ohio's law, he said, quote, I don't see what society gains from that, the death penalty, proving in one statement that he's not qualified to judge. He's not qualified to judge at all. And, you know, this idea that a Supreme Court justice would change his mind, ladies and gentlemen, the Supreme Court is not the final arbiter of anything. And I think people are just so stupid these days. They've been the products of the government education system. When they see the word supreme next to court, they just assume that the Supreme Court must be supreme because they don't believe in God. They don't have any idea where morality comes from, but they're not the final arbiter. And it's proof because they changed their minds, just like Blackmun did when he decided to stop instituting capital punishment on the guilty and he started implementing it upon the innocent with the Roe versus Wade decision. Thank you very much, Mr. Blackheart Blackmun. More from the article. Judge Pfeiffer, this is the confused Ohio Supreme Court Justice. Judge Pfeiffer was chairman of the Ohio Senate Judiciary Committee back in 1981 when he and other lawmakers pledged at that time to draft a law, a death penalty law reserved for only the most heinous of murderers. By the way, Ohio, according to the AP report, Ohio has 148 inmates on death row. Executions are temporarily on hold while federal courts review Ohio's lethal injection procedures, but that delay is not expected to last forever. Well, I don't know where they get the idea. I don't see any end to the delay in executions in Ohio. I also don't see any end to the epidemic of violent crime and murder in Ohio. Let's see here. Judge Pfeiffer, had been on the Ohio Supreme Court only 2 years when in 1994 he dissented on a vote upholding the death penalty for a man sentenced to death for shooting his ex-girlfriend at the elementary school where she worked. Just not heinous enough. You know, to shoot a woman in front of a school full of kids, that could happen, you know. It's not that heinous, right? The judge already appeared to be having his doubts. He had written that, quote, the death penalty is special, and it should be reserved for those committing what the state views as the most heinous of murderers. The defendant, John Simcoe, ended up dying of natural causes on death row in 1997. Folks, I can tell you what's going on with Justice Pfeiffer and what happened with Harry Blackmun and all these other godless secular liberals who are taking our nation over the cliff, over the rim of hell, as fast as they possibly can. Here's what's going on in their pathetic, dark little psyches. Folks, being against the death penalty happens to a godless man who over a lifetime accumulates so much guilt that he begins to wonder if he deserves the death penalty. And he doesn't want that, so he loses his ability to judge rightly and inflict it where it is appropriate upon the guilty. Now, a godly man, on the other hand, he understands that there is no choice about the death penalty, folks, because we're all going to get it. Harry Blackmun already got it. Judge Pfeiffer, he's going to get it. You're going to get it. I'm going to get it. We're all going to get it. A godly man realizes that the death penalty is in force, and it is the obligation of a godly man to inflict it upon the guilty and to protect the innocent. But these judges, they don't get any of that anymore. Just unbelievable. Pathetic. Speaking of pathetic, this is from the Washington Post. Umar Faluk Abdulmutallab. Hold on here. Umar Faruk Abdulmutallab. You remember him. He's the underwear bomber. Well, he's been sentenced to life in prison in federal court in Detroit. U.S. District Judge Nancy Edmonds said life imprisonment is, quote, a just punishment. She noted that the defendant possesses a significant ongoing threat to the safety of American citizens everywhere. Hey, Judge, not killing him poses an even bigger threat, you moron. How dare you not execute a man who tried to blow up an entire plane full of people, an Al-Qaeda operative, for crying out loud. Well, the Washington Post goes on. Abdulmutallab's lawyer had said that life would be unconstitutional because no one was killed in the attempted bombing. Which the court actually allowed to be stated as if it might be a valid argument. That lawyer should have been slapped in the face when he uttered those words. But he was not. As a matter of fact, let's see here. Mutallab was actually allowed to speak. I'm sorry, Abdulmutallab. I want to be culturally sensitive. Abdulmutallab was allowed to speak. The article says he's the son of a wealthy banker who studied in London. He spoke briefly at the court session last Thursday, and he said, quote, Mujahideen are proud to kill in the name of God, and that is exactly what God told us to do in the Quran. Today is a day of victory, he said, as he smirked and laughed at the court that sentenced him allegedly to life in prison. We've got a quote here from Attorney General Eric Holder, just to finish things off, ladies and gentlemen. If you've managed to hold your lunch down this far, well, hold on to it, because Eric Holder's about to speak. He said, quote, today's sentence once again underscores the effectiveness of the criminal justice system in both incapacitating terrorists and gathering valuable intelligence from them. At which point, General Petraeus walked into the courtroom, grabbed Holder by his tie, slapped him across the face, grabbed his .45, and shot Abdulmutallab in the head. I'm sorry. That was a dream I had after reading the article. I apologize. Sometimes my dreams tend to invade my conscious life. I apologize. It was one of those dreams where you wake up smiling with a warm, fuzzy feeling all over. All right. Another embarrassment from the justice file, ladies and gentlemen. A government school teacher named Melissa Dean instructed youngsters at Public School 143 in Queens to draw up cards for her boyfriend in December because she thought it was a nice thing to do. That sounds like a nice thing to do. Have the kids draw up greeting cards for your boyfriend. Well, her boyfriend is one John Cocciarelli, and he's in prison. He's in prison, I said. Now, the Dean did not get permission from the school or the kids' parents to send the cards, some of which contain the students' names and home addresses. And Cocciarelli, he's a 33-year-old criminal who has a disturbing criminal record, according to this report from the New York Daily News. His disturbing criminal record includes, in 2008, he was busted in Nassau County for weapons possession and child pornography. after police found a disc in a laptop with nearly 50 explicit images of underage kids. In a plea deal, Cocciarelli pleaded guilty only to the weapons charge, and the pornography charges were dropped in a deal, you know, to save the judge and the district attorney a little bit of paperwork and some time. Maybe they could squeeze in one more golf game that week. So they dropped the pornography charges, and he copped to a weapons charge. Now, the city school's chancellor there in Queens called the teacher's actions, quote, totally ridiculous, absurd, and we're not going to tolerate it, unquote. He then stated, quote, we're moving for that teacher's termination, unquote. Because you can't just fire a public school teacher, even when even when the teacher has kids sending their names and addresses to a deviant pervert in prison. The school chancellor is stuck just moving for the teacher's termination. Well, that just takes me back to the other article about the death penalty, ladies and gentlemen, because whether or not the city school's chancellor can manage to remove the teacher, God will remove her. Cornell, thank you very much. And that takes us right into this story about Amanda Knox. You all remember Amanda Knox, right? Do we remember? Amanda Knox has signed a book deal with HarperCollins. Financial terms were not disclosed, but an official with knowledge of the negotiation said the deal was worth about $4 million. Over 20 publishers were interested in the book, with bids from 7 publishers at a recent auction of the Amanda Knox story. Now, so Amanda Knox, you'll remember, spent a couple of years or whatever in an Italian prison on suspicion that she had butchered her roommate. And, of course, these publishers all, they want to come in here and make a lot of money because, they say she's been cleared. Although I watched portions of both of the trials, and I never saw any convincing evidence that the first trial was problematic in any way. And in fact, earlier last week, Italian prosecutors asked Italy's highest criminal court to reinstate the murder convictions of Knox and her former boyfriend. And CBS News also reports that the November 1st, 2007 stabbing death of Meredith Kircher, a 21-year-old British student who shared an apartment with Knox, remains unsolved. It's not like there's other suspects. You know, it's like O.J. O.J. gets away with it, but there are no other suspects. And the victims remain dead, and justice remains mocked, and God remains angry about this. But he'll take care of the publishers over at HarperCollins as well. I'm sure none of these people support the death penalty, but they're all going to get it. And by natural causes, yeah. Yeah, by natural causes, they're all going to get the death penalty, and they're all going to face God, whether they refuse to admit it or not, whether they refuse to recognize their own guilt or not, they're going to face that day. All right, now, let's move on to the war file. We've got news from Iran. This is from U.S. News and World Report. They report that Iran has the ability to fire missiles at U.S. targets in the Middle East. This is according to a senior American intelligence official, if for whatever that's worth. This is Ronald Burgess, Defense Intelligence Agency Director. He says, what's more, Iran could also employ its terrorist surrogates worldwide. The intelligence community, however, believes, this is according to Mr. Ronald Burgess over there at the Defense Intelligence Agency. He said the U.S. intelligence community believes Iran is, quote, unlikely to initiate or intentionally provoke a conflict or launch a preemptive attack. So this is the same Defense Intelligence Agency that missed the nuclear explosions in India and Pakistan until after they happened. So if you're worried about Iran, get more worried. Because the idiots at the DIA, they don't think, no, Iran's not going to initiate or provoke any kind of conflict. Sir, we don't think that. We have no evidence of that. Well, the only evidence that they will accept is a mushroom cloud over Tel Aviv. And we should all hold them responsible if and when that happens. Pray to God that the Jews can prevent that from happening, because they're not going to get any help from these morons or Barry Sotoro. More from the war file. Dateline New Delhi. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu blamed Iran last week for twin attempts to bomb people affiliated with the Israeli embassies in New Delhi and Tbilisi, Georgia. The wife of an Israeli official in New Delhi and her driver were injured after a blast from explosives slapped on their car by a passing motorcyclist. And around the same time, a grenade-type device was found duct-taped to the bottom of a car affiliated with the embassy in Tbilisi. It was defused without anyone being injured. Now, the Washington Post reports that Netanyahu quickly pointed the finger at Iran. And now an Iranian foreign ministry spokesman, he responded to Netanyahu's finger pointing by blaming Israel for the New Delhi and Tbilisi incidents, charging that Israel was trying to tarnish Iran's friendly ties with the host country, and that Israel is trying to wage psychological warfare against Iran. Yeah. You remember our report a few weeks ago, fun with, what did we call it? Fun with motorcycles? Fun with explosives? I can't recall exactly. It was very witty and pithy. It was very good. So you remember the Israelis, or someone working for the Israelis, strapped a bomb onto the car of one of Iran's leading nuclear scientists, and, blew him off the face of the planet, frankly. And so it looks like the Iranians have taken a page out of the Mossad playbook here and tried to do the same. Now, Benjamin Netanyahu, according to the Washington Post, offered no specific evidence for his claim that Iran was involved, but Israel has put its foreign missions on high alert because of the anniversary of the death of Hezbollah mastermind Imam Imad Mughniyeh. Yeah, that's the Hezbollah mastermind. He was killed in Damascus back in 2008 when a bomb planted in the headrest of his car was detonated. And unlike their Islamic counterparts, the Jewish bomb got the job done, because Mr. Mughniyeh's head and his headrest, well, they got the death penalty. Anyway, so if you're worried about Iran, get more worried. And if you're a Christian in Iran, be even more worried, because we've got a World Net Daily article here. Persecution of Christians is on the rise in Iran. Claire Lopez, a fellow with the Center for Security Policy, she says, quote, "Recall that Persian history, aside from the brief interlude of the Pahlavi dynasty in the 20th century, was one of dynasty, jihad, and vicious anti-Semitism. Islam is supremacist, and whenever it feels the ability to dominate and suppress non-Muslims, that is what will occur." She says, this is completely in accord with the Pact of Umar and Islamic law on treatment of quote, people of the book from Surah 929, the Surah of the Sword in the Holy Quran. So basically, she's saying that Iran is pretty much just living out their faith in their, by the way, the people of the book, that's Christians and Jews, that's you and me, and Surah 929 is called the Surah of the Sword, which is to be taken up against the people of the book. Ms. Lopez also says that if Iran is allowed to demonstrate a deliverable nuclear capability, its behavior will become completely impervious to outside influence. They think they're on an inevitable rise, and they see the West, especially the U.S., actually aiding and supporting their rise to power on the one hand, and on the other, falling all over themselves to appease them. Iran sees the Western-allied Middle Eastern regimes crumbling before them with no meaningful counter-response to keep them in check. That's right, they're watching the Arab Spring happen, and they see this as their opportunity to rise. Ms. Lopez goes on to say, I wish I could say that the Western world once again would rise to the defense of Middle Eastern Christians and other oppressed minorities. And any publicity you can give the plight of these Iranian Christians will surely help, she said. So is that all we have to give to support our Christian brothers and sisters in Iran? Publicity? I guess that's it. That's all we can do is speak out about it because our government is weak and anti-Christ, and they're not going to step up and do anything for the Christians persecuted, whether it's in Iran or Saudi Arabia or Iraq or Turkey or Egypt. They don't mind seeing Christians being persecuted because the leadership in our government have been generally annoyed by Christians for their entire lives and are happy to see Christians killed, frankly. All right. Speaking of killing people, I want to go to a press release that was issued by the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. It is a statement in support of medical experimentation without consent and the killing of innocent persons. That's right. The American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists released a press release on February 10th. Here's what it says, in part. The American Congress of OBGYNs is unequivocally opposed to the so-called personhood laws or amendments being considered in several states. These measures erode a woman's basic right to privacy and bodily integrity, deny women's access to the full spectrum of private health care, including contraception, and undermine the doctor-patient relationship. ACOG firmly believes that science must be at the core of public health policies. So, they say personhood laws deny women access to the full spectrum of preventive health care, including contraception. By the way, ACOG, they define abortion as contraception. Abortion is the killing of an innocent person. Contraception is just preventing pregnancy. But so many members of the Obstetricians Gynecological Congress have been involved and personally profited from abortion that it's awfully hard for the organization to take a proper stand. They also, what did they say here? Oh, it erodes a woman's basic right to privacy. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to talk briefly about privacy, okay? Because there's an example of the right to privacy in the Bible. Yeah, yeah. It's early on. I think it's in Leviticus, Deuteronomy, and go back there. And there's a place that's called the Holy of Holies that God sets apart. It's his own private little space. And he doesn't let anyone else in there except on with his explicit permission. No one else is allowed to look into the Holy of Holies. That's God's private space, and God has the right to privacy. Why does God have the right to privacy? Because God has proven that he will not abuse the right to privacy. When no one is watching, God is always righteous. In the secret, darkest place where no one can see, God can be counted on to be righteous. You and I, ladies and gentlemen, do not have that right. It's nowhere in the Bible. If history has proven anything to us, ladies and gentlemen, it's that in the darkest places when no one is looking, human beings cannot be counted on to do the right thing. So your right to privacy is actually a claim of deity that you do not deserve. So if you claim that you have a right to ultimate privacy, you're putting yourself in the place of God, and God will not hold you blameless for it. Mr. Blackman, ACOG, the Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, NARAL, Planned Parenthood, all of you who worship this so-called right to privacy that you have confiscated from the living God, he will not hold you blameless. All right. More from the ACOG statement. These misleading and ambiguously worded personhood measures substitute ideology for science. They all attempt to give full legal rights to a fertilized egg by defining personhood from the moment of fertilization before conception, which the ACOG defines conception as implantation. That's because so many of them have killed so many babies. Keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, there are about 1 million abortions a year in America, and Planned Parenthood only accounts for about 300,000 of them. Who else do you think is killing all these children? It's your local OBGYN. I know a lot of them don't do it and won't have anything to do with it, but an awful lot of them do. And you can tell by this press release. By the way, for ACOG, these are medical doctors at the peak of their profession. To use the term fertilized egg is a complete embarrassment. They should be stripped of their medical degrees and kicked out of the hospitals where they work. Because nowhere in the Carnegie stages of human development, which guided these people to their medical professions and degrees, nowhere in there is the word fertilized egg. An egg can be fertilized, but once it's fertilized, it's something else, Mr. Obstetrician Gynecologist. I would think you would understand that, but perhaps it's not clear since I'm just substituting ideology for science. And you would never do that. No, certainly not. Defining pregnancy as only occurring after implantation, that's completely unscientific. It's completely ideological, and it's designed to mask your guilt for the blood that is on your hands, ACOG. I don't know if I want to read any more of this. I'll just read the final sentence. These personhood measures must be defeated in the best interests of women's health, says the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. The best interests of women's health, except those women who are killed. Because about half of all children killed in the womb would become women were they allowed to live.
When the children cry, let them know we tried. Because when the children sing, then the new.
It's the Weekly Worldview. Thank you for your attention, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're getting something out of this. As we expose the liars and the liberals and the leftists who demand their privacy when they don't deserve privacy. They obviously have proven they can't handle privacy. But personhood, despite ACOG's consternation, is on the march. Story from the New York Daily News. Republicans hoping to take down both abortion and President Obama in 2012 think they have a winning issue in the debate over personhood. In several states, new legislation defining human life as beginning at conception, not birth, is being voted on, making it a hot-button social issue and a key factor in the election cycle. And that's absolutely true. The New York Daily News goes on. In Virginia, there's a bill that still must go to the Senate, and in Oklahoma, there's a bill that has passed the Senate and must go to the House before becoming a law. Now, the Virginia bill, from what I understand, is a personhood bill that makes an exception for abortion. So I cannot support the Virginia bill. But I have been informed that the Oklahoma bill is solid. It's a real personhood bill that would really ban the killing of innocent people. I know a lot of people like to use the term abortion. I like to use the term the killing of innocent people because that's really what it is. And why should we use a term that's used by airline pilots when they have to abort a takeoff or a landing? I prefer the term killing of innocent people because that's what it is. Now, back to the New York Daily News article. While such laws don't yet exist, personhood legislation lost in referendums twice in Colorado and once in Mississippi since 08. Opponents of personhood are pointing to the latest victories in Virginia and Oklahoma as proof of their progress. Indeed, this sentence, the first sentence of that paragraph could have been written, while such laws don't yet exist, personhood legislation has gained momentum twice in Colorado and once in Mississippi. We keep getting more and more percentage of the vote. Anyway, the New York Daily News says in at least a dozen states, anti-abortion activists are attempting to place such initiatives on the ballots this year. The laws intend to override Roe v. Wade and effectively prohibit virtually all abortions. And that has Democrats and pro-choice activists concerned that the Supreme Court's landmark ruling enshrining privacy as the ultimate right, which gives women the constitutional right to kill their children, well, they're afraid that Roe v. Wade is slowly being dismantled. Slowly. How about it hasn't been eroded one iota in 40 years? Abortion has become more and more available every day of my entire life. Slowly being dismantled. I don't want to slowly dismantle it. I want to knock it all down in one fell swoop. And I hope you do too, America. Because if we get together on this, we cannot lose. Don't be afraid. We can't lose on this. I've got a quote here from Keith Mason, president of Personhood USA. He told the Daily News, quote, "I have absolute certainty that we will see personhood as law. There's a good chance it could happen this year." Unquote. Such legislation takes time, he said, just as gay marriage laws have. He says, we're really just starting out as a movement. Okay, Keith, well, I don't appreciate being lumped in with the fags, but I do understand the analogy. Well, you know, part of the strategery and all. Yeah. You know, don't lump us in with the queers and the potheads, for crying out loud. That's anyway, from a strategery point. Anyway, I will let that slide for Mr. Mason, since he does a lot of other good work. Maybe he hadn't gotten a lot of rest before that quote. Anyway, on to the culture file, ladies and gentlemen, from CNN. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie last week vetoed a bill that would allow homosexual couples to get married, setting up a confrontation with the Democrats in the legislature there. Lawmakers have until this session ends in January 2014 to override Christie's veto. They would need two-thirds majority. Christie has said that the issue, now this is the issue of homosexuals marrying each other in public in front of God and everybody, people. Are we crazy? Have we lost our minds? He says the issue, quote, should not be decided by 121 people in the State House in Trenton. He says it should go to a referendum to the people. Nowhere does Mr. Christie say that the matter has already been decided by the living God, the creator of the universe, because Mr. Christie is clueless. By the way, Mr. Christie, according to this article from CNN, recent polling suggests that New Jersey voters are slightly in favor of legalizing homosexual marriages. A little over 50% in the latest poll say that, fine, let the queers get married. Let's just flush the whole culture down the toilet. We have a quote from Evan Wolfson, a president of the group Freedom to Marry. Evan says, quote, "By vetoing a bill that would ensure that all loving, committed New Jersey couples and their families can share in the freedom to marry, with all its protections and meaning, Governor Christie planted his feet firmly on the wrong side of history." Unquote. That's from some queer who wants to destroy the country. New Jersey already allows civil unions, which Christie supports. He's already fine with them going down to the courthouse and getting married, basically. But he draws the line at calling it marriage, but he has no idea why. What an idiot. By the way, CNN concludes the article just to make us feel good. Washington State, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, Connecticut, Ohio, Iowa, New York, and the District of Columbia, not Ohio yet, currently allow homosexuals to get married. Governor Christie, get out of here with that, loser. All right, another example of how stupid Chris Christie is, from Trenton, New Jersey, from the Courier-Post there. Fending off fierce criticism for planning to lower flags at state buildings the day of Whitney Houston's funeral, Governor Christie said that the late singer is not a role model, but she has earned the honor as a cultural icon. I know, you're like, what? That's a completely vacuous statement. It has no logic or sense. It's completely ignorant, stupid, foolish, Mr. Christie. Is he just trying to embarrass himself? Christie said he's disturbed that people are disparaging Houston's accomplishments because of her troubles with substance abuse. Now, we all can see, Mr. Christie, that, you know, you abuse food, okay? Let's just get it right out there on the table. Mr. Christie has been known to abuse a jelly donut or two, or maybe a rack of ribs, or like a whole cow. And I believe in a recent poll in New Jersey, he was on the top 10 list of those most likely to be discovered next dead in a bathtub, was Chris Christie, with a chicken wing in his hand, probably. But Chris says about drug abuse, he says, this is a disease that some people struggle with and conquer on a day-to-day basis, and some people succumb to it, and I don't believe that that should diminish the other contributions they've made. Are you kidding me, Mr. Christie? Is that an example we want to set for our kids? That if you become a strung-out drug addict and embarrass yourself and your family and hurt your children, that we're not going to hold that against you? Is that the standard you set for your kids, you moron? Unbelievable. A retired Marine from Southampton wrote on Twitter, quote, why is New Jersey lowering our American flag to honor Whitney Houston? Are they all mad? That's a retired jarhead. And then we've got a wife of an Army sniper. She said, shame on you for ordering our flag to be flown at half-mast for a singer who OD'd. Our flag is to be used to honor the true Americans' heroes, the ones you just disrespected, Mr. Christie, unquote. That's the wife of an Army sniper. But in Chris Christie's world, in his economy, in his worldview, in his logic, a soldier from New Jersey who walks the straight and narrow, does what's right, and then is killed in the line of duty is simply not a cultural icon on par with a strung-out junkie who we hoped she was a Christian. I mean, I don't want to be too hard on Ms. Houston, but Mr. Christie, please. And people think this guy should be the President of the United States. I'll tell you who should be the President of the United States is Michelle Duggar. Yeah, this is from the Chicago Tribune. I'm not kidding. Michelle Duggar in the Chicago Tribune, she's the mother of 19 kids, and she said at CPAC that she's not happy with the Susan G. Komen Foundation, which recently backpedaled on their decision to pull funds from child-killing industry leader Planned Parenthood. So she's mad. Duggar said this. She said it's ludicrous for Susan G. Komen to stand by Planned Parenthood when Duggar claims they are a leading performer of abortions in the country. That line was written by the Chicago Tribune author of the article. Duggar claims they are the leading, as if that can be disputed or if it's up for debate. Well, that's what Duggar claims, but, you know, she's some redneck chick with 19 kids. We don't know that Planned Parenthood actually leads in the performance of abortion. That's just what Duggar says. And then the author of the article goes on to say, Planned Parenthood says their organization does not pay for abortions with federal funds and has said they use the money from Komen to provide cancer-preventing screenings to women in need. Yeah, and the Tribune author prints that as if it's the gospel truth, with no credit to anyone. Yeah, unbelievable, disgusting. Anyway, I would vote for Michelle Duggar or any one of her kids or her husband, Jim Bob, as President of the United States before any of the people who we've got in front of us right now, and certainly before Chris Christie, for crying out loud. All right. Now, speaking of politicians, we've got an Al Gore story. Al Gore has reared his ugly and sizable head again. This is from London, the Reuters wire. Former U.S. Vice President Al Gore wants to end the default practice of quarterly earnings guidance on Wall Street and explore issuing loyalty-driven securities as a part of an overhaul of capitalism. Yeah, Al Gore wants to overhaul capitalism. And I know people wonder, why is it that these rich capitalists who've made millions of dollars, why is it that they want to institute socialism? How could that be? It seems to go against who they are and what they've achieved. Well, I've got an explanation. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. But Mr. Gore, according to the Reuters article, together with David Blood, senior partner of a green fund called Generation Investment Management, he and Gore have crafted a blueprint for sustainable capitalism, and they want the financial industry to adopt their plan to support what they call lasting economic growth. Gore had the following to say. Do we have the actual tape? While we believe that capitalism is fundamentally superior to any other system for organizing economic activity, it's also clear that some of the ways in which it is now practiced do not incorporate sufficient regard for its impact on people, society, and the planet. Unquote. That was Vice President, former Vice President Al Gore. Now, David Blood, his partner, David Blood, who's the former CEO of Goldman Sachs Asset Management. So here I got to get to this, folks. I don't think I'll do anything else from this story, will I? Yeah, I probably will. But here's the thing. Why are these rich capitalists hell-bent on instituting socialistic ideas? And I'll tell you why. It's because they already got theirs. And they want to stifle competition so they can keep it. That's why. Because they're greedy, selfish, godless heathens who should not be listened to. Because they already got theirs, and they want to stop the younger generation from getting any of it. That's why they do it. Am I yelling? I'm yelling. I'm sorry. I apologize to any females in the audience. I know that women don't like yelling on the radio. Really? Yeah, and are you okay? Are you getting nervous?
I like yelling.
My extremely attractive audio engineer is worried that she's going to get the back of my hand any second. Stop, stop shaking. It's okay. Anyway, Blood says that many businesses have not grasped how value destructive some elements of modern capitalism have become. He said, there's a quote from him. In America, as soon as you say the word sustainability, people think of socially responsible investing, tree hugging, and we don't believe in that at all. We think sustainability is just the best practice in business. Unquote. Mr. Blood, you are a liar. You are a liar of the worst sort. And the free market, restrained by godly ethics, drives real sustainability and is the best practice in business. But you don't know God, so you wouldn't know any of that. So you fall back on your tree-hugging, greeny-weeny socialists in order to keep the money you've got and to keep the rest of us down. And, you're not going to keep us down, frankly, because we're not keeping God in the closet anymore. We're going to take him out, and we're going to use the power that he has because he intimidates you godless heathens, you pathetic heathens. You all say you act tough, you know. You act tough like Christians are weak, but you're intimidated by God. And we're going to keep putting God in your face because in Christ we will have victory over you no matter how much money you have and no matter how much ink is dedicated to you. All right. Now, Rick Santorum, he's on the defensive because of some comments he made about birth control. Yeah, I'm going to go a little long. Okay, I'm going to go a few minutes long, but only a few. I'm almost done. Rick Santorum, there was an interview back in 2006 where Santorum said he finds the prevalent practice of birth control harmful to women. So this author of this article, her name's Jennifer Rubin. She's writing for the Washington Post. She says, the impression that Santorum finds the prevalent practice of birth control harmful to women is, frankly, mind-numbing. Yeah. You know why? Because for a person like Jennifer Rubin, that's how defiled Ms. Rubin is. The very thought of any measure of sexual discretion is so foreign to her that it makes her head hurt. The idea that you should not be able to have sex wherever you want with whoever you want makes her head hurt. That's how defiled and disgusting Jennifer Rubin is. I hope her mom and dad are proud of what she's become. She says this is in part how Santorum lost Pennsylvania by appearing extreme and schoolmarmish, too far to the right of average voters. Well, I got news for you, Ms. Rubin, you walking pile of syphilis. In perilous times, all you free-thinking deviants will trample over one another to get behind a godly man on the right. You know, it'd be like England with Churchill, you filthy heathens. You'll line up to get behind him. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, days that Churchill could have only imagined are on their way, Ms. Rubin. So you might want to move to the right now behind the schoolmarmish godly types like Rick Santorum, before it's too late and you're embarrassed, and you end up with your feet firmly planted on the wrong side of history. This idea that we should hide our conservatism in order to make the liberals like us or vote for us, it's pathetic. The power of the Word of God has more power than any of these liberals. So my advice to Rick is don't back down. Now, there was a I've got a story here from the New York Times. New York Times reports on Santorum. In a remark in his book, his 2005 book, It Takes a Family, Santorum blamed radical feminists for undermining families. Well, he was asked on the ABC program This Week back in 2006 about this this line, that radical feminists have undermined families, as if that's up for debate. And Mr. Santorum replied, "Sadly, the propaganda campaign launched in the 1960s has taken root. The radical feminists succeeded in undermining the traditional family and convincing women that professional accomplishments are the key to happiness." Well, is that up for debate? I mean, I couldn't argue. I don't see how anyone could argue with that. You've got women now out there in the workplace and kids coming home, spending the time after they get out of their government school factory all alone because mom's at work out there trying to achieve some level of self-actualization that was sold to her by the radical feminists. Well, the New York Times reports that Mr. Santorum argued in the book that many problems facing the poor could be solved by building stronger families and communities, including by making divorce more difficult and providing better training for fathers. What a radical concept! The man's a radical! Now, I told you that he was interviewed about this book in 06. The interviewer, according to the New York Times, was George Stephanopoulos. And he asked Mr. Santorum about the quote in the book. And he challenged Mr. Santorum to identify the feminists who were pressuring women into the workforce. Stephanopoulos said, "Well, I'm asking you, Mr. Santorum, where are all these feminists?" And Santorum said, "It comes from an elite culture. Dictated again from academia, dictated again from the Hollywood culture and the news media, that says the only thing that's affirming, the only thing that really counts is what you do at work. And that goes for men and women, and it's wrong," said Rick Santorum. He said, "It's wrong to tell that to fathers, it's wrong to tell that to mothers, and we need to value mothers and fathers spending time with their children much more than we do in America." And Stephanopoulos walked away from that interchange thinking he'd won the argument, and the media is reporting it as if Stephan Fetchelot won. But Mr. Santorum, don't fold up like a cheap suit, which, by the way, I made that prediction, that Santorum will be placed in the crucible over the next few weeks leading up to the election, and my guess is he'll fold like a cheap suit. I hope not, but I've been disappointed by so many politicians that I just don't want to get my hopes up with Mr. Santorum. All right. Now, one more from the election. This is from Politico. The leader of the heavy metal band Megadeth, Dave Mustaine, has endorsed Rick Santorum. Here's what Mustaine said. "When the dude went home to be with his daughter when she was sick, that was very commendable. You know, I think Santorum has some presidential qualities, and I'm hoping that if it does come down to it, we'll see a Republican in the White House, and that it's Rick Santorum." Now, Mustaine has since said, well, that wasn't really an endorsement, but when you read it, it kind of sounds like an endorsement. Now, Mustaine called Newt Gingrich an angry little man. And we know why Mustaine is mad about that, because that's his shtick. He's made a career out of being an angry little man, and he doesn't want any competition from the likes of Newt Gingrich. He said, Dave Mustaine, the prophet... He said, "Ron Paul makes total sense for a little while, then he said something so way out that it negates everything else he said." Okay, I'll agree with you on that, Mr. Mustaine. And finally, he says, "As for Mitt Romney, I've got to tell you, I was floored the other day to see that his kids have a $100 million trust fund. Where does a guy like that make so much money? There's some questions there," said Mustaine. So anyway, I did a little research on Dave Mustaine because I had no inkling that he could possibly be a Christian ever. I never thought that for an instant. But it turns out he claims he is, and the only proof I can see is that he refuses to play on stage with overtly satanic bands, which, well, you know, the bar's not too high when you're a rock star to be a Christian. It's kind of like being in Hollywood, you know? Dave Mustaine is an Alex Jones truth or whack job, but he very well may be a Christian. And he's married to the same woman for 20 years. Praise the Lord. That's great. Finally, Dave Mustaine, the prophet from on high, he says, "I can't bear to watch what's happened to our great country." Dave, Earth to Dave. Dave, you're a part of all the bad stuff that has happened to America. You participated in it for 30 years. I mean, seriously, I never thought this guy was a Christian till I saw this headline. Megadeth. Yeah. Megadeth is the name of the band, by the way. I read up on you, Mr. Mustaine, and I'll give it, you might be saved by grace, but I would hardly call you an effective ambassador for Jesus Christ, Dave. And I don't know how much good you'll do Rick Santorum, frankly, but, well, I never much cared for the whole speed metal thing, so I never got into Mr. Mustaine. I don't like vocals that sound like an injured duck either, so I never got into Mr. Mustaine's vocals. But hey, we hope he's a Christian, and if he's in heaven, maybe he'll learn how to play guitar properly. I don't know. Somebody give him some vocal lessons. All right, that's it. We're out, folks. I want to thank KGov, Denver Bible Church, Persons USA, American Right to Life, Theology Line, TheologyOnline.com, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.